Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss.
Hello, this is Kim Wardlow. I am your host for NLVL. We are in October, and this month we are talking about emergency preparedness. And last week, we talked about some of those basics of planning, of putting together go bags, the different sites that you can go to, like weather sites to get information, and emergency alert sites that you can sign up for, and all of that. And we had Monica Weber with us last week. She is joining us again this week. So thank you, Monica, for coming back. This week, we're talking about going beyond the basics and to actually how to plan and execute an evacuation. So I think that's kind of the next step, and people might be interested in that. You can do this preparing, but than when you actually have to do it, how that actually works. Yeah. So when it comes to evacuation, I'm guessing you want to start ahead of time with planning as best you can, knowing Absolutely. That you can't account for every possibility. But where do you suggest people start?
Yeah. So with starting with evacuation, there's kind of three main steps that we typically advise people on. And part of that is because of the nature of evacuation, especially in Colorado and in the Front Range, where places that have maybe your more traditional hurricane, while there is a really devastating hurricane that's hit the country towards the end of September.
Right.
And this is that season. There's typically a little more time to give people that guidance versus when we talk about wildfire type of evacuation, that's often much quicker moving. And so that pre-planning is super, super important for folks to do. So all that to say, the three buckets that we tell people to kind of focus on are knowing what modes of transportation you could utilize. So whether that's, you know, riding in a personal vehicle with a neighbor or a friend. For some folks, that could be, you know, getting out in whatever means necessary if those options aren't available. But planning ahead for that, also knowing what routes you would take, and that's not just routes out of your neighborhood, let's say, but also routes even to just get out of your home. Mm-hmm. Something that was brought up to us by a partner of ours that uses a wheelchair was, if your ramp happens to be in your garage, but for some reason that's not accessible, how are you going to get out of your home, right? And so what are other options to kind of think through? Or again, coordinating that with your support system ahead of time to think about, okay, if I do need assistance, who is maybe nearby that I can get in touch with to say, hey, I'm stuck here. Can you come over and help me get out, you know, the front door in maybe a less traditional way than someone might normally use? So thinking about those routes and garages with that as well. And then also what you want to take with you, which we could dive into that as a whole different little blurb that I talk about, but what to take with you is really important, both from that kind of life safety or essential items that you need to get through the day to day. But then also thinking about what are some of those sentimental things that you would also want to take with you should you have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, sometimes these disasters, you know, they're unpredictable. They can happen very quickly, especially like you said with wildfires. So having that plan is important. You've talked a little bit about transportation, and what are some tips of trying to prepare for that? Because you may be very versed and used to taking public transportation, but in an emergency, that might not be available.
Yeah, that is a great point. I'm glad you bring that up, because public transportation typically in a disaster type of scenario isn't going to be running the same that it normally would if you're in that impacted area, especially, right? Because they might be diverting buses or other modes of transportation because they don't want to send people into that danger area. And so what will typically happen, and this varies depending on where you live, but what will happen is that there'll be law enforcement that will go door to door. And that is sometimes a way that they're able to kind of find folks that might need that additional assistance and be able to get some of that coordinated when it's really in a bind. So that's one option. And then really, really what we encourage folks to do is lean into that support system that you have of family, friends, neighbors. And that's something I always tell people. If you don't have that yet near where you live, maybe you're new to your area or just don't have the access to necessarily get out and chat with neighbors often. Mm-hmm. That's something we're really leaning into those folks and starting to build that, even just little step by little step, can be a big help. And things that, you know, you might think, well, I need a ride from them, but there's things that you might be able to support them with as well, right? If it's not an evacuation type of disaster, you might have a ton of resources or knowledge or skills that they don't have. So kind of taking that spirit into that conversation of, it's not me just asking them for something, but I have things I can offer as well. And something that we've created from our office that we have on our website as well. And you could do this without these little cards as well, but we have this kind of like large index card size deal. And it's got a place for you to fill in kind of your contact information, the best ways to get in touch with you, whether that's knocking on the door, email, phone call, text message, whatever is best suited for you. And then the back side of that, which you could do this just on a piece of paper as well, add your contact information, how you like to best be communicated with, but then sharing what are those things that you might need assistance with, because that's a really great way to kind of start that conversation with neighbors. And if you feel awkward doing that, tell them you listened to a podcast and this lady named Monica said everyone should go do this. And so now here you are, chatting with your neighbor about this thing, because that really goes so far in a disaster. It can be between 1 and 3 hours until help arrives, because our first responders, folks that are kind of traditionally in those roles, are tied up in trying to stabilize whatever that hazard is. So let's say the fire, mm-hmm. they're trying to get the fire under control. So all those resources get pulled to that, and sometimes there can be a delay. And so really making sure to the best of your ability, you've got that plan with those supports ahead of time, because then that can be your ride, your assistance in loading stuff up in the car, whatever that might be, wrangling your pet or service animal, any of those things that you might need assistance with, you got pre-planned, and really essential to let those folks know that they're part of that plan and plan with them, just so that they're aware and it's not something catching them out of the blue when we have an evacuation, that they know, great, if this is going on, this is whose house I'm going to go grab them, assist them in whatever way you all plan out together.
That's great. Maybe people make a new friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Meet your neighbors.
Yeah. In our current times, sometimes people are, I think, less out maybe in their neighborhoods or, you know, doing things that I feel like growing up, we knew all of our neighbors really well. And mm-hmm. I can't say that I know mine super well now. So this is not just a prompt to all of you listening. This is a prompt to myself, to lots of us, of how do you create those deeper, better relationships to where you could feel comfortable saying, okay, I'm going to depend on them for a ride, or even on kind of not the flip side of that, but let's say that you're away from home, but you need someone to go get a pet that you have inside or some important, you know, memorable items, medical equipment, medications, anything like that, having those relationships with neighbors or folks that live close-ish by to you can help you to get those things. If it's someone that you develop that level of trust with and you say, great, you can have a key to my house or the code to get mm-hmm. into my, you know, PIN code lock or whatever that might be. That's a super huge thing when it comes to evacuation planning as well, is on those things you want to take with you, accounting for, if I'm not home, is there a way that I can access those things by utilizing support systems in that way as well?
And having people that are close by, I mean, it's wonderful to have family or friends that would be more than happy to help you. But in an emergency situation, if they are not fairly close by, they may not be able to get to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that is a real challenge and something that I think, you know, all over the place, we're doing planning on how do we get better at this. I will say locally here, we have VIA that provides paratransit and other transportation for our community. And they're a group that knows kind of who their normal clients are. And so mm-hmm. when there's been disasters, they kind of know, okay, we might got to go scoop these people.
Right.
That's not proper grammar either. Might got to go, but might have to go scoop these people on up to help them get out. And that's something that through like our office operates an emergency operations center during disasters. And so we have a specific unit within that that coordinates transportation. So then information, depending on what area you're in, that just being this is how we do it in Boulder County. But if you're somewhere else and happen to be listening, there will be information most likely that's then pushed out of if you need support in this, there's a line to contact. But again, that can sometimes be that slower moving thing. So that importance, I can't stress enough, of really trying to plan or using those local organizations. If you know, oh, I do usually get my transportation from this provider or any of those resources, lean into those to see what is their capability during a disaster so that you know what that's going to look like and kind of can plan accordingly based on that.
Yeah. And I know we touched on this in the last episode, but if you are not in Boulder County, obviously so much more to the state, that and rural areas, especially, you know, check into what's available in your county, in your city or town, because certainly counties will have some notification process and, you know, something along those lines. And it's just finding out what applies in your area.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because once you get those notifications and get signed up for those, that'll allow you to get the most time, like we chatted about last time. If you get an advisory or a warning or whatever that kind of earliest notification is in your area, that gives you then the time to either activate that support system, or in some cases, people, you know, will even use less traditional means of transportation to get out. So that's something that you can do as well. You know, oftentimes you think it has to be in a vehicle and that's my only option. But if your options are really dwindled down, thinking about what other ways or means do I maybe have to leave this area, if at all possible. And we've had some creative examples in the past.
I was going to say, do you have any stories you can share?
We were at, I think this isn't like that out of the box, but it got a good chuckle when this gentleman shared it. So we were at an assisted care facility doing a presentation on preparedness and talking about evacuation. And there was one individual there and he said, I know no one in my family's coming to get me. None of them live close enough by. And he kind of was, you know, in a like mood about it, which fair. And he said, but I've got a plan. And we're like, okay, tell us about your plan. And he's like, I bought a scooter, like a kind of, you know, rascal scooter ride on type of motorized thing. And he was like, and I'm scooting out. And it gave people a chuckle in the room, 'cause they're like, oh my gosh, he's going to be scooting down the road with his little flags on the back and whatnot. But, you know, chuckle as it might, he had a plan. He wasn't just going to kind of throw his hands up and say, well, I'm stuck here, there's nothing that I can do at all. So even thinking about those, while that might not be accessible for everyone, and maybe not wanting to go out into the world, you know, blind or low vision, saying, I'm going to scoot down, that's probably not the safest option necessarily. But thinking about what are, again, those kind of creative options, or we've heard of people saying, well, I'm going to walk out. If I have no other option, I'm just going to start walking. And I think someone's probably going to pick me up at some point, right? And so if you're more rural,
somebody will see you.
Yeah, if you're more rural, that does compound those issues. But that's something where then even thinking, if you really want to go kind of deep into it, thinking about those factors that would lead into like a fast moving fire, right? So if we've had really dry conditions across the state or region that you live in, even, and we've got high winds, the high wind is really what drives fires to move quickly. And so if you know, we have a red flag day, maybe that's instead of waiting for something to happen, maybe you link up with someone and say, you know what, I'm going to go stay in town with my friend here because this seems like a pretty high danger day, so that I have quicker access to be able to mobilize if I need to. So that might be taking it to an extreme, and again, not necessarily accessible for everyone to say, well, I'm going to drop everything in life and go stay with this other person. But it's really looking at what is that risk acceptance that you have and figuring out, am I comfortable staying here or would I rather play it on the safe side? And there's no correct answer for that. It's whatever works most appropriately for your life and the things that you've got going on.
Are there other practical steps in terms of evacuation and expanding it out even from yourself? So if you're responsible for a child, or you have, if you are in a rural area and you have animals that you would like to evacuate, and all of those types of things as well.
Yeah, I would say expanding out with that. Yeah, like with children, again, the support system part, I know I've harped on that a ton, but that is really that number one thing. And if it's children that are not of a driving age or, you know, they have any reason that they would not be able to operate on their own, making sure that you create plans with them. And again, tapping into those folks of if they're home, right, they're 14 and they're home by themselves, because that's, you know, or younger than that, even, who knows, but they're home by themselves and you're at work, you're off doing whatever you might be doing, making sure that those kids know, hey, what is our plan? If this is to happen, if the phone rings and it says this, right, or as mm-hmm. you as the adult might get that notification and be able to contact them, but really making sure the whole household and whole family support system, whatever that is, has that good idea of if this happens, what do you do? I was at an event for work yesterday and there was a mom there with a daughter who was probably like maybe 7. And we were chatting. I'm like, well, this is a heavy topic for a little kid to talk about disasters, but mom mm-hmm. brought her over. So here we go. And so we were just chatting about, like, do you know what to do if there was a fire? And not, you know, bringing up like, there's going to be a wide sweeping fire right, that impacts right. the whole community. But daughter had an answer of like, yeah, I know I'm supposed to go outside. And if mom's not home, I go to the neighbor's driveway. Right. And mm-hmm. so thinking about how even for your household, you can kind of instill those plans into everyone in the home. With animals, they're probably not going to be trained well enough to say, oh, yes, run out the door, Fido, and to the neighbor's driveway and they'll take you. Mm-hmm. That's absurd. Yeah. But something to think about with those pets or larger animals, even for folks that have horses, cattle, anything where like cattle, if they're out, might mm-hmm. be more challenging. But
yeah.
animals that are in a more enclosed area, you know, name your large livestocky type of animal, or even smaller dogs, cats, service animals, anything of that nature, practicing with them ahead of time is really essential. With the large animals, the safety piece of like horse, for example, if you're asking them, get in this big scary metal box, you don't want that to be the first time that you're having them do that when there's smoke in the air and it's
right.
stressful already, both for yourself, anyone who might be assisting with that, and the animal, right? So really getting that down. But even with our smaller animals that we think of are normally like much more easy to handle, with them making sure to practice, because with the stressors that they might be picking up on from us or just environmental things, right? If it's even not necessarily, well, I won't go off. I'm like, it could be thundering. I'm like, probably not if there's a fire, but you never know. Mm-hmm. But if there's smoke in the air, there's, you know, high wind, any of those things, your pets are going to pick up on that. And mm-hmm. your pet that might normally be super cool, does everything, well-behaved, might become way more skittish, maybe aggressive, even if they are really well-trained. So thinking about just what that might look like. And again, practicing. So if you know, I'm going to put a harness on my dog to get them out of here because I need to safely handle them. Does the dog know how to get the harness on and be calm? Like, I have a friend mm-hmm. whose dog will like try to nip at you if you try to put his harness on. He's fine in a collar, but the minute that harness comes out, he's like, no go.
Doesn't like it.
So thinking about that, and even we've talked to folks before about, you know, they know, oh, it might be a higher risk day. Maybe it's a red flag day, or they've got that advisory or warning kind of that heads up that maybe nothing's happening and you're not in the danger area yet, but you could be nearby it. And they've said, you know what, we just grab the cat and put them in the bathroom because that way they can't go hide under a bed, you know, run right. away. So kind of doing those things that help narrow the scope of what you'll have to do when it comes to evacuation time. And same goes with like the things that you might want to take with you. I think something that can be really, really important is making sure that those things are in an accessible spot, right? So if it's stuff that, you know, I need to go get this, making sure that it's easy to navigate to and easy enough to find to be able to take with. And that goes from like a, you know, vision loss component of great, is this somewhere that I can navigate to? But even things that require power, like we worked with someone who had mentioned, like, I can't get to anything, you know, on the second floor of my home because I use a device to get up and down the stairs. And I can't get some of those things that are up there if the power is out or if I'm right. in a rush. I don't want to get stuck up there if something was to happen. And so thinking about, you know, even for yourself navigating around your home, is there a spot that's easier to get things, or you keep things all on kind of an entry floor to where you can navigate to those more easily? I've said navigate a million times, but thinking about, again, those like life safety things. So that could be medications, assistive devices, medical equipment, anything that might be really essential for you to just live day to day, right? And be well. But then also on that flip side, those sentimental items. And those are oftentimes not things that we're going to just say, oh, throw it in a bag and it'll sit in the closet forever, because they might be things that we use daily mm-hmm. Or that you like to have, you know, out in your home. And so something that we'll recommend to folks on that, what are you going to take with you side, is really making a list of what are those items and what are the locations in your home. and having that in whatever format people have said, like, oh, I'm going to have that, you know, posted somewhere because then my other family members can grab these things mm-hmm. and assist with that. Or I'm going to have it in an electronic document because then I can share it with, you know, my neighbor and my friend that lives nearby in our household, whatever that might look like. But that can be really helpful because it's a focusing tool then. So when that stress hits of, oh my goodness, you get the notice that you have to evacuate, your brain probably is not going to be fired on all cylinders in the way you want it to. Because folks that are even really well versed in emergency response stuff that I've worked with are like, I grabbed some very strange things when I was evacuating my house. And it's not necessarily, you know, they're like, well, I had, you know, the emergency supplies, but then I didn't grab any of like our family photos or, you know, this, you know, artwork that's important to me or whatever it might be, you know, a device that I really need. So thinking about what those are ahead of time can help, again, to focus so that when that stress hits, you're like, I have a clear game plan and the folks that might be supporting me have a clear game plan of what I'm talking about. So if I say, oh, this thing in this location, they're not going to grab an incorrect item, right? And that they know, like, if it's especially medical equipment, anything like that, they know what all do they need to get with that to take it so that it's operational for you.
Right. Well. Any cords or power mm-hmm. batteries exactly. or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So things like that. And then it's also really helpful, again, one, you can delegate it to other people in your home. So if you're the responsible one, you're like, all right, household, we're making a list. Great. Then when the day comes to evacuate, you're like, cool, you're getting the first half, you're getting the second half, right? And you can be the delegator of those mm-hmm. things. And then if you're not home, it also allows for, again, a neighbor, friend, someone that might have access into your home to go get some of those critical things. Like maybe you have a medication that you're like, I need this. It might be kind of hard to replace or really expensive to replace on the fly. Get that. Or again, some of those sentimental things to just have that extra layer of support and options. Because that's really what we try to do when we think about evacuation planning or planning for any type of disaster situation. It's looking at how do we plan ahead to give you the most options possible so that if one is eliminated for whatever reason, there's something else that you can kind of roll to and find a second way to still get through the same kind of mess that is presented in front of us during a disaster.
Right. Well, and a couple of things I thought of as you were talking, like one, some of these things, not necessarily transportation and barriers as much, but mm-hmm. In the case with the daughter that you spoke to yesterday, when she said, yes, I know what I'm supposed to do. I go out, you know, and I go to the neighbor's driveway if my mom's not home. I'm thinking she's probably thinking of a house, a mm-hmm. fire in her house. But yeah. Some of these things also pertain not only to natural disasters, mm-hmm. but emergencies that might occur in your house where you need to evacuate your home. You might not have quite the issues once you get out mm-hmm. if it's not a natural disaster.
Yeah.
But these things can help in those kinds of situations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very applicable to broad strokes disasters, but then also, you know, a fire in your home is still a very personal disaster. And so
yes.
being able to take that same line of thinking into that as well is super helpful.
And then I was also wondering, because you were mentioning like, oh, well, if, you know, the 14-year-old is at home and getting alerts, is there, when you sign up for alerts, mm-hmm. can multiple family members sign up, or is there an age limit of how old you need to be to sign up to get? I mean, obviously, your 5-year-old is probably not going to get an alert, but you know, once you get into those teenage years,
yeah.
Can they sign up so that they're getting alerts?
Yep, absolutely. This event that I was at yesterday, there were quite a few teens that were probably in that like 12 to 15 age, because I would ask them, mm-hmm. and I'm like, "Do you drive?" Just because they were coming up. I'm like, all right,
right,
here we go. We're going to talk about it. And we had some really good conversations, but even talking to them, asking, do you have a cell phone? Because if they have a landline, they can, of course, also sign up. But most of those teenage, you know, younger kids did. And so telling them, like, hey, you can sign up. That way, if something's going on, you'll know about it. And that's something that, you know, folks can do, even if they're out of state, right? There's not really limits on this. Like, I usually sign up for alerts because I'm a little bit nutty. But when I travel, I'll sign up for alerts to wherever I'm traveling to, because mm-hmm. it just gives me that additional awareness. So if you've got, you know, family, friends, other places that you know, like, oh, they're kind of my phone a friend or my additional person that's going to check in to make sure, hey, did you get this alert? And, you know, do you know what you're doing? Or even planning ahead with them just to kind of brainstorm together, that can be really helpful. But, you know, they could live in Maine and they could sign up for alerts for your location where you're at in Colorado, and they could still get those as long as they sign up through whatever system you use locally. So that's kind of a neat thing, again, just to have that additional kind of level of awareness, and folks who know what's going on for you can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Especially if there's a disaster, like we just had the hurricanes, mm-hmm. and people saying, well, I know my son and his wife are there, but they don't have any power. They don't have any cell phone access. I'm not quite sure how they found out that they were okay, but they did. And so, you know, just so people kind of know the situation in your area, if they're trying
with that kind of not being able to tell if folks are okay too, when cell and power is all that down, it makes it very difficult. But something that we'll encourage folks to do is think about, like, if you only use your support system that's in town, they're probably impacted too, right? To some degree. Right. And so something that we'll encourage people to do is, like, pick someone that's out of town that is almost your, like, central check-in point, right? So if you and folks in your home evacuated, you call Aunt Kathy. Aunt Kathy's like, cool, I know they're good. Then other folks, you know, relatives, friends, whoever is in that network of people also calls Aunt Kathy. And it's like, okay, cool, they're good. Yep, I can update you. Monica's also good. And it kind of alleviates that stressor of communication when you're maybe in the moment and you're like, I'm trying to figure out, like, we got out of the danger area, but now what in the world am I doing? You're stressed out. Sometimes chatting with someone else who's like, oh, we're leaving now and we got the cat. You're like, great. I'm trying to figure out other stuff. Having that other person that's like, great, they are calm, they are removed from it, can be helpful. And then even having locally kind of a meetup spot can also be helpful for folks. That way, if that communication is down, you've got a place where you can go and say, great, we know we meet up at the parking lot at this grocery store, and then we unite and kind of go from there as well. Because that's something folks will ask as well sometimes, of like, should we take, you know, all the cars in our home, and how do we orchestrate that and these things? And I often tell people, I'm like, that's up to you. But I know for me, I would say everyone in the household, we're getting in one car so we know where everyone's at.
You're together.
Right. Mm-hmm. But some folks are like, well, I want to have two in case something happens to one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pick whichever way you think would work. The one thing on transportation I will say about modes of transportation is fuel in vehicles, or whatever mode of transportation you might take. And that can be either power if it's an electric vehicle, or just fuel, especially if you live somewhere that is harder to get gas. Keeping, you know, at least a half a tank if that's something that is within financial means for you at all times, just because it gives you that buffer. And even for folks in town, like, I had someone share that at a workshop once and I have not gone back. I'm like, well, it always has to be a half a tank, because if I had to evacuate, I don't want to have to be waiting in line at a gas station or adding those compounding stressors. So thinking about that for yourself, if you're grabbing a ride with someone, as you plan ahead, say, hey, what's your plan on having gas in the car? Yeah. You know, you can gently nudge them. And again, you've now got this knowledge. You listen to this podcast, so you can say, hey, I heard that this is a good idea to do when it comes to evacuation. So just extra tidbits to think about. And again, really exploring those what ifs when we think about evacuation, explore the what if, and then create a plan around that. And something I'll say too, if folks are in a spot where you can't get out, right? You're like, the roads are jammed, I can't go anywhere. There's kind of a list of things that we encourage folks to do. First option is get out in whatever way you can, right? Whether that is you're in a car, you're walking, however possible. But if you cannot do that, things to look for are a place that has little that can catch on fire, right? So something, okay, if I'm in a parking lot, that's going to be safer than a grassy field, right? If you're rural or just anywhere else, or, you know, well-manicured, well-watered lawns. If you live near a soccer field and you're like, great, I can navigate to that, and then I can hang out there if I have no other way out, that is a place where it's not going to be comfortable, but you have a chance of being okay there versus staying in your home, staying put in an area that is maybe not as safe, right? So that's, again, really down that hole of hopefully you never, ever have to do that. But in a bind, that's something that I think about where I live. Like, I have a large parking lot near me. I have this pretty well-watered baseball complex near me. Those are places that if I could not leave any other way, I'd navigate my way to that and make sure to hunker down and stay put until things pass.
Yeah. Well, and we've been focusing a lot on wildfires just because here in Colorado, that has been the number one natural disaster, an emergency that we've had. But I know the next one is cold. It's when it gets very cold, and there may be snow or there may not, but preparing for that, because there might be some different types of barriers and things in colder weather.
Yeah. Yeah. When we look at the cold, I think, you know, particularly for that, it might not be evacuation that we're looking at, but it's a you're now sheltered in place because you're blizzarded in, or there's other things going on, right? The roads are not travelable. So with that, kind of looking at what are those supplies or emergency things that you might need to have in home. So when we talk about that, our main ones are like food, water, and whatever medications you have. When we think about food in that, you know, regard, thinking about what are things that you might not have to cook, because if that is a challenge or if the power was out for some reason, I know we had that in the county this last April where the power was out and then there was, you know, really cold temperatures up in the mountains. And so for folks figuring out, well, how do I still eat when I have this? So looking and thinking about what those items are that can sustain you. Backup power sources are also helpful, and just ways to stay warm, right? Because for folks that might be more sensitive to the cold, or even have medications that need to stay at certain temperatures or equipment that needs to stay at certain temperatures, kind of having that plan for what are ways that you could warm yourself in a safe way, right? We don't ever want people to put, you know, light a fire in your home without the proper ventilation things, right? And not light your home on fire. But for folks, even after this last one, there was that thought of like, oh, are people going to try to put a generator in their home and hook a heater up? Because that is a surefire way to have a really, really bad day. So don't do that. But, you know, thinking about, do you have extra blankets or do you stay in one room, you know, during something like that with extreme cold where you say, great, we're going to go to this room, shut all the doors so we can keep as much heat in and kind of operate out of that space of your home, is another way. Cause winter weather and all the things that come with that, we could probably do a whole nother bit on just those components.
Yes. And in fact, I think we will be talking more about that in our next episode, sheltering in place, finding emergency shelters, but also post-evacuation. Do you want to tell us a little bit? And you have found a special guest for us who's going to talk about post-evaluation, post-evacuation. can you tell us a little bit about that person and what they'll be covering?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we'll have Ryan Airy, who's from our Division of Recovery and Resilience in Boulder County, and he's got a ton of expertise related to that post-disaster recovery for folks when it deals with kind of the reimbursement phase, insurance stuff, all that. So he will be a great asset to have and much more knowledgeable. I'll still be here. So you'll get a little bit of me, but a lot of knowledge from him that'll hopefully be super helpful to folks.
That'll be great. I appreciate you contacting Ryan and coordinating that for us, because I know certainly after the Marshall Fire, there was the immediate needs, but then the insurance and the rebuilding, I mean, that has just extended out. Even now, people are still rebuilding in many cases. So I know that will be important information to have as well.
Yeah, lots of good resources to share next week on that topic.
Great. Well, we will look forward to having you back. Thank you to everybody who is listening. If you have any stories you'd like to share with us, please do that either through our social media, or you can always reach us at contact@aftersight.org if there's something you would like to share or phone us. So we would love to hear from you as well. But hopefully, as we've gotten into emergency preparedness this month, this has been valuable information to you and will help you navigate your life with vision loss.